Okay, welcome to A Course in Miracles. We got something pretty cool to talk about. We never specifically worked this angle, so this will be kind of fun. With your existence in your seemingly separate body and your investment in your little S self, there is a already running program of time. Past, present, and future seem to be the labels and the choices that we have made. Now, our focus over these last couple of weeks is understanding fear. Understanding how fear works. Because, of course, it turns out fear is a motivator. Fear is something that your ego deeply trusts. Trust to guide you. You actually follow your fear more than you might care to admit. It's just so natural being in the world, being of an ego. Avoid the things that are dangerous. Go toward the things that make you safe. It just seems like the right thing to do. So fear ends up being your friend, your trusted friend, your advisor. Fear helps you determine not only who to judge, but how to judge them and how much. This is what fear has become. Fear has become the ego's protector. And of course, as you imagine, the problem with fear is that it hurts. And the problem with fear is that it's a focus on loss. Fear for the body at the bodily level is neutral. You know, hot stove or a sharp knife right against your skin. Not what we're talking about. We're talking about the fear that you would carry in your mind, the kind of fear that make you worry, the kind of fear that would make you afraid for your happiness, not your healthiness. Healthiness is a mechanical material level. It doesn't have the kind of suffering that your happiness lost has. This is what we work on with A Course in Miracles. We don't focus on the form. That all takes care of itself as you awaken. What doesn't take care of itself is your belief in your identity of actually being in a body in time. That does not take care of itself. Your belief that what you see in the mirror actually represents you, even a part of you that's precious. Careful now. Careful now. That's what you have chosen, and you will keep yourself at this level of understanding and existence until you choose to awaken from it. That's what the enlightenment game is all about. It's becoming aware of the truth in contrast to the awareness of what is not true, that's been trusted. False, the illusion we call it, separation we call it. As I've said many times, the whole problem can be summed up by understanding that you know something deeply, deeply. You know something in your heart and in your mind that's not true. You see why that's a problem? It's not a problem like a sin, because there actually is no sin. But it does mean that you will continue to believe and know something that's not true. So you'll continue to suffer with things that are not of love, joy, and happiness. You will continue to struggle. And for most of us who end up studying A Course in Miracles, we're like, thank you. Somewhere, somehow, I found written down that I don't have to wait for somebody else or something to happen to me for myself to achieve true happiness. Finally, I can do this. The good news is you're the problem. That's really good news, right? If everybody had to wait for Luann to say that, I can point to Luann, right? Can I point to Luann? No, she's probably someplace else for you guys. If we had to wait for Luann to finally share with us the magic words to release the world, wow, tough. If we had to understand what Jesus or Buddha actually said, not what was mistranslated. See, that could miss if you, no. Course in Miracles says, you now can awaken to joy and love and peace and return to being a creator. Wow. I'll take it. So that's the benefit, I think, of A Course in Miracles. I've never seen it said more clearly anywhere, nor more consistently. I've never read a more consistent book in my life, except maybe a math textbook. That's consistent end to end. But this is about your life. This is about your identity. This is about you. So, one of the pieces that's already rolling, one of these things that you believe with your heart and soul as a default and instantly, but that's not true. These are what the Course calls the box to the awareness of love's presence. Are beliefs that you have them and you believe them, that you believe they are true. They're not true. They're dreams. By your believing them, you exclude the truth that would stand in the same place. So one of these that we're going to work on tonight, it's an aspect of time that we don't usually talk about. And it's future. We've talked a lot, and if you've done your workbook lessons, the first 10 or so are explicitly on, mostly on your thoughts of the past. And the past is the deadly drug that seems to prove that you do exist in time and colors everything you think, and it seems perfectly rational. No doubt. We spent a lot of time on that. Tonight, we're going to look differently a bit. But on an equal illusion, the future. There's a part of your mind that already exists, and it runs automatic programs, all associated with the past, okay? But you have programs that run concerning you, but what's going to happen tomorrow, next month, next year, future. Or if you know somebody and you love somebody, you frame them in what you think they're capable of doing next year or next week or next month a lot. Program that runs automatically that is a frame on your existence called the future. So let's take a little time to get in this space. We'll do a little meditation, and what we'll do is you just want to get your mind around this future, this concept of the future. Let's get ourselves opened up so the Holy Spirit can counsel us a bit and get us aware of this drug that we're all on. We're already on it. Do you spend time, your consciousness now, thinking about the future? Have you noticed yourself disappearing even into the future thoughts? What is the future? Are there benefits of thinking about the future? Is there a danger about thinking about the future too much? Is there a cost to investing in the future? Everybody here knows that now is the only time there is from right-mindedness. Don't spend your time thinking about that, because, of course, that's the truth. But if we were living in the truth, we wouldn't need A Course in Miracles. Problem is, we're addicted to something that's not true. So in this last minute, I'd like you to look again. I'm going to ask each of you to give me a pithy phrase on what is the future. And then if you can, pick something beneficial, how you can use the future beneficially, usefully. And then also I want you to surface for us a cost of investing and holding the future dear. See if you can pull that off. Give me another couple of minutes to think about that. You see, the goal here is to bust the ego. We could go to the platitude and say, now is the only time there is, and you are perfect just the way you are. That's very nice. We could play some music, we could meditate on that, and we would feel really nice. But you would not have healed. You may have felt what it feels like to be healed, but you may have not have healed. Of Course in Miracles, we actually heal. We actually go find the problems of the ego, and we look at them one last time, we shift our perception of what they are, and then we let them go. The miracle is the shift. Forgiveness is letting go. Forgiveness is the release. It's the healing power. And now we have, looks like 10 people or so, who will help us surface, bust to the ego on how it uses time. And, you know, obviously there's uses for it, and they're good uses for it that help us make our way. So we must not ignore that. You understand the level that you're operating on is part of your ability to live in this world, like we covered last week. You know, there is a practicality to your journey, and it's one foot ahead of the other. Don't fall off the cliff into the quicksand. It's really helpful when you drink water and sleep well, right? So, Luann, would you tell us, if you can, you're gonna start us out, if you can, and first you tell us, if you can, what is the future to you?
Well, what came up for me right off the bat was the future is another perception that's another dream.
Nice. And then are there benefits to the future?
The only one I could think of was, if I can manage to, well, let me get up to where I came to that, because I can't do it straight off. So I was thinking that my future is based entirely on my judgment of the past. That's where I get my so-called dream from. And yeah, and I'm sick and tired of judging almost anything, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm tired of it. So one of the disadvantages of thinking about the future is I know I'm judging the whole time I am. So the other disadvantage is I also know that the chances of it being exactly like I'm perceiving is probably pretty negative. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm pretty good at it compared to a lot of people, so still it's pretty negative. So it must be worse for other people, a lot of other people. So anyway, the advantage of the future is from a body point of view, it keeps me alive. It keeps the body alive, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I go to the store because I need groceries. I drive safely because I don't want to have an accident. So, and I envision myself doing that.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a practical aspect to it. There's a practical
aspect to it, right. Yeah. But when I start judging how things are going to turn out, that's when I get in trouble. In other words, I can go to the store and say I need milk, and then I might get rotten milk, or I might forget something else I might want or something. Who knows? Because I don't do notes about groceries, but my memory is terrible.
Worry about going to the wrong store and paying too much, and then having it take your happiness away by force.
Yeah.
It hasn't even happened yet. You haven't left your house yet.
Yep. I can make a mess of it if I not very, very careful.
Yep. Yeah. There's
so the worst thing about thinking about the future is means I'm not living in the present, as you've already mentioned, and that means I'm missing what I am in the moment, what I am now. Yeah. And the only time that that isn't true for me is, I might even say it's not true when I'm at night, I'm dreaming, so. But when it isn't true for me is when I am engaged in the lessons or the mantra you told me to do or whatever. That makes me feel like I'm doing me now.
Yeah. Yeah, the past and the future really do disappear.
Yeah.
In those moments. Yeah, that's sure enough. A different level of thinking. Mm-hmm. Jacqueline, can you tell us what is the future? What is this whole thing that we're so occupied with half the time?
Well, for me, first I saw that I'm in a movie. I'm in this dream in this movie. And in this dream movie, I have another movie I'm running in my mind about the future. Mm. So I'm creating a whole nother movie. I can even see it. Oh, I'm going to do this or that, you know, I'm going to go. So I have a movie within the movie. And I'm not awake.
Pretty good. I like it. A movie within a movie. That's great. Are there benefits to running that movie? Do you think that it works well for you sometimes to play?
Well, it's like taking care of, I mean, I am, like you said, the practical side.
Mm-hmm.
I have another teacher that's more than once in the last year has really recommended I don't make lists. I don't think of lists in my mind, you know, so that's part of this whole futuring, right? Mm-hmm. And so the benefit is, you know, like I've got to get ready to go back. I'm leaving Oregon and going back to Santa Cruz, and so I'm preparing to do that. Well, today I've been doing a lot, but I'm already thinking about what more I've got to do tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already thinking about the drive on Saturday, so I'm futuring about it. It helps me to be organized in that way, but then when I think about, okay, could I let go of all of that and just be here and, you know, each moment. But then I notice the dream me gets, there's an anxiety that comes up. Like, oh,
uh-huh.
How could I do it? How can uh-huh. I survive? So I notice the anxiety from thinking about,
there we go.
Just let go of all of that, all that futuring. So that's kind of what I experienced.
See, so there's a positive use of the future because then you'll have the right stuff in the car. They already have gas. You don't have to pull over for that. Or you'll have your food that you love to eat.
Yes.
Stuck in the car for 10 hours of driving at a time, but you'll have that food. It's going to make it all a little better. You'll have a copy of My Course in Miracles playing in the CD, I hope.
That'd be good.
It just makes the ride better. That's good use of the future. It's not good or it's not bad. It's helpful.
Yeah.
But the anxiety, oh, it's got a whole different flavor, right? The anxiety, instead of giving you things like the right food and the right audio and being prepared, it's taking from you. Right, and still, you haven't driven in the car yet, so you may not actually have the right food, but you're thinking about the right food, and you're preparing. Anxiety is right now taking things away from you in the future.
Yeah.
And you feed that animal? But we do.
Yeah.
Good. Excellent. Michaeline, what is this future? What's going on? Wait. One of us has to unmute
you. Okay, I unmuted. Thanks. Let me put on my glasses. I actually had to take a note because I didn't want to lose what I had thought.
Sure.
So a projection of a desired experience or result. So it's projecting it mm-hmm. into the future. The good was for practical matters like fixing the car, making appointments for that kind of thing. The not so good is like a lot, like the expectations of ego-driven desires and wants that may or may not occur that oftentimes result in suffering or disappointment. And doing all of that, it fills up, like was said before, the present. So the present, it's filled with illusions of something that doesn't really exist in the in the moment at all.
Sometimes it feels good, right? Dreaming up something.
Yeah, daydreams. Daydreams as a writer, daydreams are definitely fun.
Uh-huh. Now, as a writer, careful now. As a writer, they're fun and useful in a certain way.
Right.
When it's personal, when it's Michaeline's life, you're daydreaming about, it's kind of like a drug because you're probably daydreaming something
very
good and propitious is going to happen tomorrow. And what happens when it doesn't?
That's the kick. I mean, that's the ego seeking and not finding.
Yes, setting you up for a fall.
Right.
And then somebody's got to be guilty for setting you up. Who's that going to be?
Well,
you're the one who was dreaming yesterday.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So we'll have a good portion of guilt to hand out tomorrow after you dream up something just great today.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. So, Judy, tell us, what is the future? What do you make of that? And I can't unmute you. You'll have to unmute yourself.
Okay. You as soon as you said the word, it brought to mind that four-letter word, F-E-A-R. And I had to get out of that fear feeling. And it's probably, you know, just because of the news and stuff like that, you know, it's in there.
Yeah.
So future sounded real scary. And the only way I got out of that scary state was to come back to the course is saying, no, that's an illusion. Get out of there. And then I jump into the bad things. Okay, so that's the bad of the good things. No, the good is making appointments, as Michaeline said. And, you know, you can get excited about a wedding and or a birth of a child, et cetera. So those are the good things. The bad were, as several people have said, I got into real scary space. Which I don't go around usually scared. So I was very surprised, and as I say, I got out of it by just reminding myself I have tools.
Well, that very excellent. That's the whole idea of the exercise, is to get you to honestly look at your own thoughts. And you found your ego and you found a vulnerability that you know very well. All of us know it. Fear. And how much fear uses the future. Isn't that required? You see, the Course in Miracles teaches us that fear is in the future, that guilt is in the past, and the present doesn't exist because it's too busy feeling guilty or trying to avoid fear. So, but that's it. Good. You touched it. And there's nothing to be afraid of. You just thought of the future and the vulnerability of how your ego uses it, and you caught the ego. Excellent. Good job. Cecily, tell us, what is this future, this whole dream thing of the future? What's going on?
So I thought the future for me is either what I want, imaginings of scenarios that I would like to come to pass, or thoughts of what I don't want, thoughts of things that I don't want to come to pass and am afraid of. So that's basically what the future is, one of those two kinds of thoughts.
Nice.
And you know, I liked what Michaeline was saying about, you know, I think it was Michaeline, you were saying that it's based on, you know, your past, or maybe it was Loanne, your past thoughts kind of experiences are going to dictate what you're going to think about for the future. And so it's really not good, except for the practical piece that people have talked about, because, even these imaginings of what I want are based on my faulty perception of the past. So, and I don't perceive my own best interest. So even if I'm imagining what I think I want, it's not necessarily what's in my best interest. And so it's really in my best interest to not think a whole lot.
At best, you could repeat what you've already done.
Yeah.
In some degree, even if it's, slightly modified. But it's not truly free, is it?
Right.
Beautiful. Good, good. Deborah, what do you think? What is the future? Hang on a second. Let's work on unmuting you. You have to do unmute yourself.
Good. I wrote down a couple things too. And the future is, to me, is imagined scenarios. That's what I came up with. And it was interesting because at this time, for my benefit, writing about the benefit, it was actually so fear-based because it was strategies around projected potholes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure that's a benefit, you know? It's more like fears running the show. So, and the downside to me was loss of presence. I'm not here, I'm there.
Well, I'll tell you, anybody who's done some meditating, you start to get accustomed to what presence feels like and how spacious and ease it is. And you'll feel it when it's gone. You bet. It's very, very tiring, isn't it? Not being present is very tiring. Once you know how relaxed presence is, how restful presence is. Yeah. Yeah. You bet. You bet. Donna? What can you tell us about the future?
Okay. So a lot of things that I was coming up with have already been said, but the first thing that occurred to me when I closed my eyes was that the future that I create is based on my desires, but it's always a way to ward off fear. So even when I'm imagining it in the positive, it's still a way to ward off fear. And then it reminded me of the lesson, I don't know which one it is, in the early part of the lessons where you go through the exercise and you look at the opposites and you find out that you really don't know which of the things you want. You know, you think you want this, but then you find out the opposite has the same value. And so, you know, I wish having known this already could help me more in this moment. But it's kind of what I navigate a lot because I'm aware of the feeling of fear, and it still sucks me into feeling kind of creative. Especially on some good days, I feel pretty creative with what I'm thinking about. But when I get right down to it, I can feel the fear is there. And, you know, one other thing, I was thinking about the creative uses, and I was thinking I was with my grandkids because I hadn't seen them for a long time. And so I was camping out in the backyard with my 5-year-old grandson, and he wanted me to tell him a story. And make a story up. And I was just thinking how I thought, well, okay, I don't know what story I'm going to tell. But, you know, there's a function of the creative mind that it's like the ideas just come to you without going in the future. It's coming towards you and it comes through you. I don't really know what that phenomena is, but that's a really nice thing where you don't even know what's going to happen and the story is making itself up. So it's the same kind of strange. I mean, it's just like a phenomena I was thinking of.
Very good. Yeah, people call that in the flow. People call that inspiration. People call it open-mindedness. Yeah, you bet. Very, very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Essential for creativity. Yeah. And essential for innocence as well. Being able to have your mind open like that, and that's a really good description you had of that, and what a free sense of it is. What a free use of mind, like storytelling, opening your mind, or being creative or inventive. Playful is another word. When you're really playful, you're not practiced, right? You're not repeating something. It's a bit creative, isn't it? It's undefended. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a great moment. Those are great moments. Very good. Good descriptions. Good, good. Okay, and Timothy. Dr. Day, you there? Tell us about the future.
Well, the future is a distraction from what's immediate. So salvation is immediate. And time besides that is no more of a concern than the body is. Time is neutral. The future is neutral. My body is neutral. That all that said, salvation is immediate. And I need to understand that it is. Otherwise, I'll always be afraid of it somehow, somewhere.
Is there a benefit to using this power of the future? Future thought?
Just as the rest of the students in this class have said, there's a practical use to future planning for just the day-to-day business of being in a body while you're here. So from that point of view, it's a skill to practice, you know, what do? Well, I need to pay my bills. That's future thinking. It's useful to be able to pay my bills or to think about relationships that need, or it's useful to manage them. It's useful to think of the future in terms of, I'm going to set aside a certain amount of time every morning and evening in which to practice the lessons.
Let's look at salvation, because that's really a wonderful way to look at this, as you've pointed out. If you are repeating things you already know faithfully, and you're not saved because you're an egomaniac like all of us, how could you possibly have change occur?
Okay, I'm going to call you on "I'm not saved," or otherwise I wouldn't be here. I disagree with you that I'm not saved.
Right, okay.
I don't have to accomplish anything. I don't have to understand anything more than I understand now.
Okay.
You can't take away my state of salvation. It's there. It can't be disowned or lost or be in a state yet to be earned. I've already got that.
Sounds like you're describing the truth.
You tell me.
Because the very description of truth is that it is.
Yeah. So,
and the very description of an illusion is that it isn't.
So the future is just, it can be a distraction most often. It can be practical if I'm thinking in terms of continuing to want to learn more and more skills. How do I use time skillfully? How do I use this body skillfully?
So here's the hazard.
If I'm thinking in terms of, oh, I have to accomplish something else, or there's something more that has to take place before I'm saved, or before.
Only if you're not already feeling perfectly joyful all day.
That's right. And I don't feel perfectly joyful all day, every day. And that's because I still have lessons to learn. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but what, yeah, something's popping up that goes either into the future or into the past, I'll venture to say. Somehow the mind takes some stock or value, and here I'll use this word carefully, trust. The mind goes off on an adventure of trust, and it goes off into the future or the past. And then away with that goes happiness and perfect joy. It's the condition here of time. It's a habit, like an alcoholic continues to drink. We egomaniacs continue to ego.
Okay.
And so there's a, you know, this is a, like I say, you know, this is kind of a interesting topic because, and I think Donna touched on it, that in your best moments, when you're most loving or playful, you're not repeating what you already know. You're alive. You're actually present, but you are in this interesting open-mindedness. You could just about call it future-oriented, but you know it really isn't, because as Donna was using her hands and trying to put words on what's, you know, unspeakable, she was allowing this to happen. Her giddiness or her jokes or her storytelling or Michaeline, your best moments of writing, somehow you got out of the way and the sentences started to unfold and the meaning started to come in from who knows where. But it was beautiful. Or anybody here is a musician. As you write your music, it just starts to come to get when you're really in the zone. Any of you who do art, or all of us have something where we get in a zone and we step back and we let something unknown be trusted. The problem, the difficulty is that we trust something known a bit too much, and it brings fear in the future or guilt in the past. And so it's kind of an interesting thing, this open-mindedness to allow change to occur so that we don't repeat the things that make us suffer. We don't repeat something that even now we know, and you certainly do, and all of us here who's read A Course in Miracles know, there's lots of things that aren't true that we worry about, think about. Your salvation is you become aware of your truth. You become aware of your freedom. When you stop practicing ego, how do we do that? That's what we're busting tonight. We're busting the future orientation, the future, the freedom and the power of open-mindedness gets blocked by a past orientation describing the future. For change to occur, there has to be a shift. You have to allow, you have to trust something that you're not already doing. And if you're practicing something that's false, you need change to occur. Otherwise, you'll continue to do what's false. And you'll trust it, and you'll defend it, and you'll be reborn into it again and again and again.
Well, the hallmark of that is that you continue to suffer. You continue to be uncomfortable.
Right, right.
If you notice those states of emotional being or mental, you know, being, then you know that there's still work to be done.
Beautiful. You bet. You bet.
I have a question, Andrew.
Sure.
So for change to occur, you need to trust something new, something that hasn't already occurred. So I think about that like in really simplistic terms. Like if you're spending time in a new environment, let's say you're like going into a work meeting with like new people or a social event with new people, like we have these repertoires in our mind of how we have handled these types of situations in the past. And so we think, you know, I'm going to, you know, greet these people. I'm going to look, you know, hold myself professionally. I'm going to do X, Y, Z. And so we're just kind of recreating.
Yeah, they'll say something to me that's appropriate, and I kind of have an idea what it should be, and they'll recognize me for what I've said after I say it, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus just like truly being like, let's see how this situation unfolds. Like, yep. Let's see what Holy Spirit has in mind here, and being totally open to it going anywhere, which can be scary, because if you do it that way, then you're like, well, what if I sacrifice the client because I don't use my professional repertoire that I usually use? Or what if I come across, you know, so there's like fear is the block from allowing us to open to the new.
Yes, and then defense picks up so that you don't look like an idiot. And then fear and defense and prevents you from being playful, or if that's too strong of a word for a professional environment, present. Or actually listening, actually there, open-minded. Yeah, that's right. That's the razor's edge that you would walk.
So that means that our kind of what we're working towards is being able to go into environments and not bring our past learning into those environments, and rather just be there as each one comes to us and allow it to unfold.
Your past learning would come with you for its practical aspects into a business or situation. And where that's needed is pretty easy to determine. Then there are moments, usually when you're listening to the other person, then there are moments when you let your guard down, when you become human, you become present, when you react to their stories and way they describe their needs, their emotions, and when they're trying to describe what they want you to do, what your company to do versus their company to do, you'll start to see their humanistic side start to come out. And by yourself being undefended, their human side will come out in the business scenario. And the Holy Spirit will help guide you to join with them. Otherwise, you two can have a pretty mechanical meeting and only go by the contract. And although, you know, it's another way to do it, but it won't be the loving experience it could be.
Andrew, I just want to add to that, too. And I've had this experience lately when I'm working on a writing project. And on two occasions, something else emerged, like I was working on like a screenplay or something. And all of a sudden, something shifted and I just went with it. And it turns out it was a play. You know, it was like an offshoot of what I was doing. And then on another occasion, a poem came out, this incredible poem came out. And the words really didn't make any sense to me while I was writing them, but those were like really powerful moments. And I haven't had anything like that in a long time. But I think that might be a little bit of what you're talking about by being open-minded.
Oh, my God. I hope we get to some of these things I have in mind for us tonight, because you've touched on another very important aspect of all this. That is, when you are open-minded, what's actually happening is you're joining-minded. And so poems you've never heard or music that you didn't think was in you, but you write it and own it, is actually your mind connecting with more mind. And with the ego, it has to cut that off. As you you're in your right-mindedness and in your enlightenment, one of the adventures and excitement about that is you become aware of more mind than your ego was affording.
Yeah, because there were experiences that I'd never had. I never even had the idea of writing a play. I never had an interest in writing a play. And it was like these three acts, this three-act outline came out. And usually that can be like a screenplay too, but it wasn't. It was very specific. And then I have a friend who does that, and they said, this is a play. And I was like, whoa.
So sometimes people will be very, very honest, and they'll say, Andrew, I am a little worried about what enlightenment would bring, and that it would be boring because I wouldn't have my challenges and my fears to put flavor in my life. Something like that happens. You know, some people will bring that every year.
Yes, you have to let go of stuff that you kind of were attached to, right?
Yeah, right. And it seems like you'll have to get somehow sterilized in order to be enlightened, you know, right? But there's that fear. The ego wants, that's the ego's defense for enlightenment, is that, hey, you know, you're the creative you and there's no substitute. Yeah. But what you're touching on is an important information for those people to understand and hopefully to experience somewhere. The mysterious inflow of information. Donna touched on it. You touched on it.
Cicely triggered that reminder when she was sharing about, you know, it's sort of emptying. And it's not a conscious thing. It wasn't a conscious thing. It wasn't.
Conscious is the problem. What blocks it?
Right.
This is what puts in the blocks to this awareness.
Right.
Very good. True presence is not conscious.
Thank you.
True presence is not conscious. We've talked about that before, and another night we'll investigate that. It's an amazing aspect of Course in Miracles. I've never seen it taught anywhere else, but man, does it explain everything. But you bet, that true open-mindedness is much more free than consciousness, where everything's all lined up and understood. That's not the way. That's not freedom. It's not creativity. And also, it would not allow you the access to the expanded mind, which is way more than we could possibly imagine as a little ego.
And it was suffering that pushed me to that place.
Uh-huh. Suffering's useful.
Because I was emotionally grappling with something, but I wasn't focused on that. But and so
the suffering was only useful because it tired you out.
Yeah, that's
probably. You who knew how to do it. You who knew exactly what it should look like finally got tired enough so that you let your guard down. Not required, but often that's, yeah. It's so, right? Isn't it often that for people to have their spiritual advancement, something horrible has to happen?
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's just because you're a good, solid ego. You got a good, strong ego. You know what to do, what to say, and to whom and when. Those egos really need a catastrophe. It's quite useful for the Holy Spirit. They finally get shocked and tired out and put their defenses down, and then they can hear the Holy Spirit. Yep, that's true. Stephen Sayers.
Yeah, let me intercede for a second. Helen Schuckman and Bill Thetford got tired out.
Yeah.
They got exhausted. They said there must be a better way. There must be another way.
Thank you.
And only when the guard was let down, then did the writing begin to pour out through Helen. And with, you know, Bill's help, you know, made it from her shorthand to a typed out page. That came out of despair. That came out of frustration.
Yeah.
And it came out of two people joining and saying, there's got to be another way to do this, a better way to do this.
Sure did.
And lo and behold, out it came.
Sure did. Thank you. Thank you. Good reminder of how all this came out. It was not roses between those two.
Perfect. Andrew, there's another way that I look at it, too, is I had the best 10 years of my life when I had this epiphany that I should become a psychologist and go to school again. And it took me 10 years to get my doctorate, partly because I was enjoying myself immensely the whole time. I didn't care what I did every day. I was like, whatever I was going to do was involved in getting my doctorate degree, probably. And I was just, whatever came up is what I was fascinated with. And I think about that, and I feel like, you know, 10 years is a long time in a way. Feels short now, but sometimes when you're in it, it feels like a long time. But every minute of the thing, even when things went bad, I thought, well, there must be a reason for this. And it's a good reason, because it's where I am right now.
Yeah.
And it, and so, so
I, the word passion. Anybody ever looked at the word passion? It's kind of funny because we use it very differently now than it was originally used. Passion, if you look at the root of the word, it means to suffer.
Mm. Well, I don't feel like I suffered during those 10 years.
Well, it's because it's transformed. And the more more civilization has occurred, it's changed around, and this passion has taken on somewhat of an opposite meaning. It was before, you say I had a passion over dealing with something. It meant that you suffered, and it was a horrible experience.
But the passion of the Christ.
Yes, yes. And now, you know, you're stuck with it, right? The passion in the old days, something would happen, and you were stuck with it. Now, today, our passion in the nicest sense that we use it today, you're also stuck with something, aren't you? You love it, like you described your education. You found yourself naturally absorbing and learning and eagerly going through the difficult things involved in getting a PhD, and you didn't mind.
In fact, I just trusted everything was going to be whatever it was.
Yes, yeah.
I don't remember thinking about tomorrow very often.
So this is the root of passion, and it still fits today. And it describes it, what otherwise would be a suffering journey for a lot of other people who don't want the PhD. But if they had to get one in order to feed their children or to get out of jail or something, it would just be tough, tough going. But you loved it. And it you trusted it. And you found benefit and so forth. So isn't that interesting? The word passion, it's just kind of a little education there of how that same root, that experience of the human and the what otherwise would be struggle that can actually, you know, be a wonderful journey shouldn't be lost and is not lost. But look how it began. I just like that little aspect of that word. So, Stephen, tell us something about the future. What is it?
Well, you know, first off, you know, I really am just so pleased to be in the midst of this conversation, given how insightful and articulate you all have been.
That's an amazing bunch of people. It's true.
It really is just that the level of the conversation in and of itself is miraculous.
Cool. Thanks.
So for me, obviously there's what everybody's pointed to, the future that you look towards, particularly when you're a young person, you're looking for a particular future. It involves planning and strategy and all those things. At my age, you know, the kind of future things I deal with is like, what am I accountable for? What do I need to accomplish tomorrow? And just sort of line things up, however it is I want to organize that. Spiritually, having been on, I guess, what you could refer to as the path for 5 decades, it always seems like future was represented spiritually that there was somewhere to get.
Nice.
So the focus was on getting there. And even though it was clear, but somehow you just kind of evade the obvious, which is access to that is right now. So having had my eye on where there is to get has always sort of undermined my ability to be present on some level.
Uh-huh. There's a cost.
Absolutely.
In there, from one, you have managed to drop yourself into a few present moments, and you fell in love with being free.
Right. In
present moments. I've seen it on your face in our meetings, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, and so both in terms of, you know, what represents having to consider the future in a body on this planet and dealing with all the human logistics, and spiritually, you know, what I think on some level, for me, it's been appropriate to look out there, but whatever I'm dealing with, whether professionally or personally, you really got to get it back to the moment and be committed to expressing whatever, sort of like what Cecily was saying, I mean, obviously, you know, professionally, you have to be informed, you have to be educated, you have to, you know, you have to know what you're talking about on the
top
level.
What you're describing is this difficult walk with razor's edge is a good way to describe it. Too much?
The expression of it is where there is the room for us to express the love and to be available to just what occurs.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, a good example is, you know, the years that I worked at the nudist resort, you can imagine the kind of awkward conversations I had to have with adults regarding their behavior.
Yeah.
And it would be very, very easy, and on some occasions it was just right there to make them wrong, to judge them, to, you know.
You had more power over them.
Yes. So what I got committed to was, I don't need to do that judgment. Now, am I responsible for dealing with situations? Absolutely, I was.
Uh-huh.
Do I need to be effective? Yes. Do I have to have a particular result that yes is my decision? Absolutely. But can I express that with kindness and respect consistently?
Uh-huh.
So on those occasions, it's like difficult or awkward or not, the expression of it came from truth.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to me imposing my will or being in control or chastising or correcting or whatever.
When we talk about the future or try to correct somebody else, with a sense of, not with kindness, not with presence, but by the rule book or something, it's harsh because it comes from fear.
Right.
However, the same conversation can be had, like I was talking about with Cecily in her business meetings. The same work can be done, but it can be done with a sense of present awareness with the situation you're in, the actual situation you're in with an actual person, and already all the respect they may already have. That you're not, you know, that you don't need to attack.
Right. I learned to somewhat check myself because, number one of the guideposts was if I knew I was irritated,
yes,
then I need to wait.
Yes.
I need to hold off.
Good awareness. Now, at the same time, it was your duty, responsibility to all the other people at the nudist resort that the rules are behaved and people closed the gate or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
If
I stood powerfully in that spot, then it didn't require pressure or judgment. It's just like people could say whatever they were going to say. And, it was shocking sometimes what people would say to me. Yeah. But, you know, I would remain rather neutral. And in fact, was like, great, I understand what you're saying. However...
Yeah, undefended, right? You're just clear.
However, you still need to go.
You're just simple.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's easy for everybody. That's true. Now, in the situation we have of being in egos and bodies and concerned about our families and our welfare and our, you know, self-esteem and on and on, the ego has us believing something big time about our identity that's not true. If we don't somehow apply a change, like Stephen was talking about, he had to actually apply a change to these people, to the crowd. He wasn't responsible. If he continued to do what was already happening, you'd get what is already happening. If we continue to do ego, which is sin, guilt, fear, pretty much the dance card for ego, you'll continue to get that as your guide. If you're to have salvation, if you're to have your awakening, there actually will have to be some changes because you need to get out of the lie. Out of the lie. And so the ego would love to give you a book to study to talk about the future. Give you something to practice. Give you chance to say. Give you... you know, all sorts of stuff to prepare for some other time when you could be free. You bet.
Yeah.
Good, good. Okay, now we have two people that I can't identify. One of them is on an iPad. One of them is on an iPhone. So if you're present, who is on the iPad?
Hi,
Who's on the iPad?
Okay. Wasn't that Isadora? Didn't she say that?
I thought she was on the iPhone. Usually Carol's on the iPad.
I'm on the iPhone.
Oh, that sounds like Jason.
Yeah.
Hi, Jason. Good evening. Jason, will you talk to us about the future a bit? What does it mean to you?
It's pretty black and bleak right now, so I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, that's fine. Has there ever been a positive use of the future for you? Where it really worked out okay?
No, it's just mental masturbation.
That's right. I mean, that's a good short way to say that. Good, good. All right. And then so our mystery person on the iPad remains a mystery. And I assume that they're not actually there for now. Okay, anyway. All right, good. So everybody jump in. How much time do we have left? Okay, perfect. Jump into page 559 in the text, chapter 26, section 8. This is called, interestingly enough, right, the immediacy of salvation is the section we're going to peek into. You don't get the immediacy of salvation when you're so drunk on not being present. You can't, because you're rehearsing the past and you're dreaming about an unreal future. Right? But we need to bust how the ego actually does this so that we can forgive it. You realize you can't forgive something you don't know you're doing, right? Fair enough? It'll just continue. But that's what we do. We bust the ego here. But ego's anonymous. That's what we do. Okay. Paragraph 4, and Luann, let's have you read for us. Paragraph 4 on page 559.
Yet space between you and your brother is apparent only in the present, now, and cannot be perceived in future time. No more can it be overlooked except within the present. Future loss is not your fear, but present joining is your dread. Who can feel desolation except now? A future cause as yet has no effects, and therefore must it be that if you fear, there is a present cause. And it is this that needs correction, not a future state.
Okay, so the quick summary of what we want to take from that paragraph, we're going to spend our time on the next one. The quick summary of what she just read is you're fooling yourself. If you think that your difficulties is from some other time, it's a present thought. Mm. A present thought of another time. Right? It's not some other time.
That's right.
Okay? Okay, enough said on that. Now, here we go. Let's dig in. Jacqueline, would you read for us paragraph 5?
The plans you make for safety all are laid within the future, where you cannot plan. No purpose has been given it as yet, and what will happen has yet no cause. Who can predict effects without a cause? And who could fear effects unless he thought that they had been caused and judged disastrous now? Belief in sin arouses fear, and like its cause, is looking forward, looking back, but overlooking what is here and now. Yet only here and now is cause. Yet only here and now its cause must be if it affects already have been judged as fearful. And in overlooking this, it is protected and kept separate from healing. For a miracle is now. It stands already here in present grace within the only interval of time that sin and fear have overlooked, but which is all there is to time.
Oh, man, there's some good news here. Luann, you'll have to take a stab at it for me. How many years of psychotherapy to get this paragraph lived in somebody who is so fearful of the future and is sure that there is hell waiting around the corner and they have to deal with it when it comes? Can't do anything about it today. I'm already a loser, or I'm already an inadequate father, son, wife, worker. I mean,
It depends on the person, of course, but if they really have that and they really believe that, then never.
Never, honestly. It's the truth, right?
I think the wonderful thing about this paragraph is if you go and say, what's going on now, you can find the answer. And the more times you find the answer, the more time you can believe in them.
Nice. Nice, Luann. Beautiful. Okay, let's dig into this paragraph. Now, here, ready? The plans, small Y-O-U, the plans you make for safety are all laid within the future, comma, where you cannot plan, says Jesus, your trusted friend, your advisor, on this path back to freedom, on this path back to light. If you've come in pain to this book, all of us have, whether you know it or not, you've come from misery. The time and space of being actually identified with a body is comparatively miserable. Some of us are less miserable than others, it seems. But it's misery all the same compared to the lightness of being. So Jesus talks from being completely awake. And he's like, wow. He says, hey, look. He's saying, everybody, he says, the plans you make for safety, I know how you do it. I know the way you're stirring up a story of how things should or could be better. I got you, Donna. So he says, I know how you operate. He says, and guess what? Your plans for healing are in the future. I know how you operate. We're busting the ego here. Your plans for healing, your plans for happiness, your plans for safety, your plans for everything being right, fair, are all laid within the future. Welcome to Egos Anonymous. My name's Andrew. I'm an egomaniac. Next. He's got us busted here. Jesus has us busted here. Then, it's a complete teaching. Future, where you cannot plan. It's too much too fast, so we're going to slow it down and open it up. You cannot plan in the future. And I know this is pretty, it's maybe too obvious, but we have to say it. You have to raise it to awareness so that you can bust it. It's how forgiveness works. It's how changing your mind actually works. Is you take something that you believe without question. That's why when you really believe something, is when you trust it, you're not questioning it anymore. And I digress a little bit. But for example, just so you get a feel for all of us do, maybe one person here is Dr. Day who doesn't do this, but I think I can speak for the other 10 people on the call. We roughly assume that the sun goes around the earth. Roughly. That's what it looks like. I'm still, and the sun's moving. If all of us pause for a minute, according to science and everything, the sun's the one that's not moving and the earth is going. In fact, it's going at 60,000 miles an hour in a path all the way around. It's moving a lot. Spinning at 1,000 miles per hour along the way. That's what science tells us. But it's not that obvious, is it? It kind of looks to me, even though I know the facts, it looks like the sun is the one that's doing the moving. We have, in order to be aware of the truth of the sun, don't you have to take a moment personally, and raise your awareness of whether it's the earth going around the sun or the sun going around the earth? Don't you? Isn't there a habit involved? Even though you know the truth. Isn't there a habit involved? This is what we're busting here. Course in Miracles. So here it comes. I'm going to bust it. Same way, like the sun going around. Same way. Ready? Sentence one. Part two. Okay? I'm going to bust it. First of all, it says the obvious, and we got it. The plans you make for safety are all laid within the future. Okay, got it, got it. But he says where you cannot plan. That's where we have to bust the ego right now. Why can't you plan in the future? The ego says, hey, what is gibberish is this sentence? The only way you can plan is in the future. That's the definition of planning. Hello, who wrote this crap? I mean, I think somebody could make a pretty good argument like that. But this is a statement in obviousness of reality. Like the earth's going around the sun. When you understand that the reason why those words are there, these words, where you cannot plan, is because the future never comes. I know it's obvious. Like I said, we have to surface this stuff because it's a mind pattern of being in an ego-driven existence that you need to bring these to awareness every once in a while. And this is the awareness today. The future never comes. It never comes. It was a dream. And if you're thinking about the future, it is a dream. And when you finally get there, it's not going to be the future, is it? Yet again, it's the present. And when you become awake, you realize that you didn't move into some other time. You just had a sequential dream. And even that never plays out the way you dreamed it. Did you notice? You didn't notice that? There have been a few times when it was close. It was like amazing. But most of the times, especially when it was something negative, it never happened the way you thought. It's because you can't plan. You can't plan in the future. It's actually a logical argument. There is no future. There's you in the present thinking about some other time that hasn't happened and actually never will. And you're staking your reality on that. Now, there is one place where the Course uses planning quite directly. And if you're a big planner and you really want to work this over, then you'll go to page 365 and read that short section. We don't have time now, but it's really practical. I mean, it is uber practical. And what it's talking about is that your planning is done before the event, and the only thing you plan is how you're going to feel as you go through whatever it is that's coming. It's a matter of finding the presence. It's a wonderful, wonderful little section. Okay, so there's the obviousness. He says you can't plan, you can't be safe in the future. You can't plan for safety in the future because you can't be in the future. None of that is real. Sentence two. No purpose has been given the future as yet. And what will happen has as yet, meaning now, no cause. This is very, very generous of Jesus to come into your playground of past, present, and future and talk with you and talk with you in terms of giving you the benefit of the doubt that there is a way to imagine a future that could be and even live it. And there is. It's a dream. It's a state of dreaming. It's a state of creative awareness. But we don't need to touch that here because the ego's all over this stuff. We need to first undo before you can do. We must first break the false understanding, which is some kind of contradiction in terms, isn't it? False understanding? No, it's a true misunderstanding. This we must break so that you can see what's actually happening here. We must. So he does this generous, this is generous gift of your teacher, Jesus, when he says, look. He says, about this future concept that you have, and he says, I get it. He says, I get it. I lived as a body. I get it. He says, the truth is, there's no real purpose that now, as yet is his phrase, is given the future. And what will happen, that's your future, has as yet no cause in truth, right? You don't cause the future from the past. You don't cause an experience from the past. That's part of the smoke screen, that your past makes the future that you experience, key now. Or your past makes your present, right? That's where our first lessons in the workbook about is breaking that hold. My mind is preoccupied with past thoughts, and everything has its own meaning, and I have to suffer with it. Your first 10 lessons unravel all of that. But he's working on it with the whole book. Okay. Sentence 3. Who can predict effects without a cause? This is the awakened one who's schooling us, who believe in the sequence of the alphabet is sacred. A, then B, and everybody here knows what comes next. Of course. It's the natural way of things. First this, then that, and then the other thing. Very peaceful. When the letters are lined up like that, it's very peaceful. There's nothing wrong. It's perfectly neutral. When four letters are lined up, A, B, C, D, it's very peaceful. There's no room for judgment, and it's perfectly neutral. Thank you, I can sleep well tonight. But when the first three letters are F, U, C, and then, well, you see, I never said that last letter that all of you may have come up with. You came up with a future that doesn't exist. And now here we are. And it still doesn't exist. Do you see the trap? So this is just an amazing teaching that sobers us up out of when we live. I said, when we live. The ego believes you can only live in the future. And only if you prepare carefully. If you use enough fear, and maybe you might have to use extra leverage of guilt to get your future to come out the way you want it to, says the ego. That's what we call door B in our class, and you'll never get there. You can kind of see it because you picture it, so you'll keep running for it, but you'll never get there. And you never have. Your awakening and your love is in the present. Your joy is in the present. Your playfulness is in the present. Your very life is in the present. Your salvation is in the present. And yet, it still kind of looks like the sun goes around the earth. Oh, I got to catch myself, right? That's what we're doing right now. Okay, next sentence. He's continuing to teach us the same truth. 4. And who could fear effects unless he thought that they had been caused? and judge disastrous right now. You see, fear, properly classified as an emotion. I like what they picked up, that they have false evidence appearing real. Not bad, pithy little thing.
Can I ask a question, Andrew?
Yeah, bring it.
So we're talking about effects without a cause, but can you like explain that a little so I'm not wrapping my brain around that concept?
Good. Thank you. Very good. It's another metaphysics of A Course in Miracles, is that cause and effect are never separated in truth. Now, to the ego, they are. And that's the essence of projection. Projection says something happens, and then later you deal with it. And you're just going to get the full force, and you're stuck with whatever happens. And that is the discrete world of separation and why it needs time and space.
But what would be an example of, cause and effect connected to a future event and effect without a cause? Like, I still don't get it.
Sure. Okay, so one of the ways of awakening that we do with the Course in Miracles is awakening from victimhood. Okay, so it's not about the physical thing. So here we go. So a car crash happened yesterday, and it was your car that was involved in the car crash. So that seemed like a cause, and the effects are still rolling in, aren't they? Your neck, the bill, how are you going to get to work on Monday? What's your mother going to say, your neighbor's going to say, or your husband going to say, or your wife going to say when this car is wrecked? What are the police going to say? Are they going to find that you actually had some open container in the... What's going to happen next? Okay, all of that is very practical, the way things roll out in time and space. Now, of Course in Miracles, everybody here is old enough. You have all learned that your life, the quality of your life, is not due to events. It's due to how you think about the events. This is the truth of your experience. If you're ever to be happy or joyful, if you're ever to be graceful in the times of difficulty, it's because you woke up and knew that lesson 236 is true. You have a kingdom which you alone must rule. And when you do, it's like when you go, you have a good meditation, you actually cause yourself to go still, and then everything's okay. Even though it's for shit, there's all sorts of troubles going on in your life, right? Oh no. But you find peace. This is the work we do with A Course in Miracles. The world is an illusion, but you deeply believe it. So the cause, things that cause, there's all sorts of causes, a coronavirus and car crashes and bills and your weight. Are you gaining weight? Eating too much COVID food? Is that what's going on lately, Bunky? A little too many donuts. Okay. Uh-huh. Comfort food, you say. But the comfort needs to be keep coming because this thing's not over yet. Oh, the pounds. The roots. Maybe you can't get to your hairdresser and the, oh, no. This is the world. And it will continue to be the world of inconveniences. With A Course in Miracles, we start to wake up the power of our mind. And now the difficulties become teachers instead of obstructions. So, we learn that we're alive in our mind and not in the world. If you're strictly speaking the mechanics of A, B, C, D, then what happened yesterday will force what happened today. And that's the only place it comes from. But what's included in that is whether or not you should be sad. Or you should be happy. Right? What we're doing is we're breaking apart that addiction that the cause and effect includes your mind, your happiness, your attitude, your ability to be free. Course in Miracles does not talk about behavior. It does not talk about, even though it mentions it, uses it as a teacher, the word sickness is all over this book. But we're not talking about you will miraculously pop out of a cancer bed. That would not be enough healing for somebody who thought they were a victim to cancer and that's what took their happiness. Do you hear me?
So are we saying that our mind and our true self and being is totally separate from cause and effect?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
That's good news.
It's totally free of cause and effect as two separate things. Totally free. Turns out that an effect cannot exist without its cause. So the idea of cause and effect starts to get blurry. And you start to get free on what's actually going on. And the cause is only when you have time and space can you separate cause and effect. So I'm telling you, it's deep stuff going. We're starting to dip into some deep stuff, which you'll see in chapter 1 and 2, and Jesus backs off. He says, well, too much, too fast. I need to work with this fear and guilt a little more before we go into time and space. But that's absolutely right. We're healing the idea that causes are independent of effects, that there may be a cause, and then later you get the neck injury that you're forced to suffer with. Later, because of the car accident, which was out of your control, some drunk driver, wasn't you, and now you're stuck with it. Is it something happened that later grew and became something you didn't want to happen, and now you're stuck with misery? Because you had a better plan. You have a better story in your mind how things could be happier if only this were different. If only something outside me would change in the past and I could have a better future. But now, since it did happen, I got a horrible future and I'm living it right now, says the ego.
So what I'm hearing from you is what you said was pretty clear. Without cause and effect, we're free.
Yes.
And the only way to be free is not to have cause with effect or not to think they are different.
Where is cause and effect in the present moment?
That's what I'm saying. You're free if
Very good. Very good.
I mean, the way I'm understanding it, and tell me if this is right, because it's very confusing, is like, let's say with your car accident example, you know, the cause is the car accident. The effect is all these other things, you know, back injury, expenses, can't get to work. But if your mind has the ability to either judge that situation and get like embroiled in it and judge it, or to let it teach us whatever it has to teach us and to not judge it.
It's got a nasty habit of looking at the negative side of everything and then judging it.
Doesn't this come from the one thing that we have, which is choice?
Yes.
We can choose to look at everything based on what we expect it to be like a fear or pain or whatever we think, like an accident hurts our neck and we expect it to be painful. Yeah. Or we could say, or we could think, this is just how I'm looking at it. I could look at it as an opportunity to take a nap because my neck is hurting.
That's right. That's right. You can redefine it. Now, be careful, because the ego will come in handily, and it will start to give you stories to wrap around the situation and give you some reason why it's okay or good or will be good in the future. Careful, careful, careful. It can feel good to have a reason, right? Doesn't it? Doesn't it feel good to have a story of how this is going to be better? You know, happens to somebody else. It could happen to you. Careful. Spiritual ego has got you. And there's room now for even more disappointment. and more lies. Not what we're talking about here.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you.
It's a good first step sometimes if you're really in pain to have some alternative. I'm okay with that, but we're going beyond that to the true healing, which is right here in the present moment. The true freedom is for you to discover when any suffering is happening to you at any time. Jason, I'm talking to you too. When any suffering is happening to you, it's because you're drug using right now with your mind. What drug are you using? Worry. That's a drug, isn't it? Or isn't worry a drug? It seems to feel good at the moment because you're being responsible, because you're worrying about what could go wrong and make it worse, and then you'll avoid it, won't you? No, you're living it right now, even though it hasn't happened. You're suffering right now. That's what it just talked about, these first three sentences, is you've pictured up something that actually it doesn't exist and it can't exist tomorrow. You're stretching your worry right now, and if you keep thinking this, say Jason stays up all night and continues to think or worry or whatever tail chasing he's doing all the way till tomorrow. He says, look, I did it. I actually made my misery tonight stretch into tomorrow. You know, you can do that kind of thing, but it won't be the same as tonight. You don't actually cause things in the future. You don't actually plan for a future. The future never comes.
You just think them.
That's it, my friend. Think them. And it's stinking thinking that smells bad, and you keep doing it. Yeah. Now, you have to break the cycle. What's the healing?
Right.
What's the healing?
Images I've made.
Amen, my brother. Lesson 30. Very potent lesson 30. Wow. Doesn't that bust it up wide open? It says, my thoughts are, drum roll, images.
That I have made.
It says it right there. Metaphysics of A Course in Miracles in one sentence. Wow! So he doesn't let off there, right? There's still another 336 lessons to work you out. Now, this is, oh gosh. Well, we've run out of time. So I just kind of want to buzz you through a couple more things in this paragraph. Hang up if you need to. Thank you. Otherwise, hang in there for a few more minutes. This is a really important topic. You do have the gist of it, but he says a few more gifts here for you. He says, 5, belief in sin. Now remember, Course in Miracles, you know, there's no sin. We awaken from that. But to the ego, sin is an unforgivable mistake, right? Mistakes are innocent. You can forgive them and move on. Whoops, sorry, didn't mean to. Okay, no problem. We'll pick up the pieces and we'll go from here. Isn't that lovely? Yeah, that's a good holy relationship. The ego will judge you. There's some guilt to go around. There's a sin has occurred, right? Unforgivable mistake. So, belief in sin arouses fear, something you can't change, remember? The sin arouses fear, and like its cause, this belief in sin, belief that you can make a mistake that can't just be forgiven and let go for being a mistake, okay? It's looking forward. It's looking back to when it happened or when it already happened or when it could, what's going to happen in the future because it happened, right? All over the place. But overlooking what is here and now. Here and now is where you actually live and where you actually love and where you actually join with anybody or anything else. Not the future or the past. This is what you get as we bust the ego. We get freedom for us and for everybody else. Yet only here and now its cause must be, because that's where your thoughts are. Now, Jason, your thoughts are now. They're happening right now. Right now. And then they're happening again right now. Not in the future. And all that past stuff was just made up. This is why presence meditation is the way out of depression. You get more and more present, get between your breaths, get between your thoughts, and expand that space in between. This is the way out of depression. Try it. Okay. You'd only hear now its cause must be if its effects already have been judged as fearful. You don't feel anything that you haven't already chosen to be true right now. And in overlooking this, is it protected and kept separate from healing, right? You can't fix something in the past and you can't fix something that you think is in the future. You're stuck. This paragraph is telling you it's not in the future and you can heal it right now because what's suffering is your thoughts, as Jason said. Your thinking, not the events, not your life, not your cancer, your weight, your bank account, your whatever. You're not suffering because of difficulties in the world. The world is difficult, always will be, with a few sprinkles here and there. Your thoughts are what's suffering. Way worse than you could by the circumstances, right? Here we go. Number 8. For a miracle is now. Of course it is. The correction is always now. All your thoughts are now. And a miracle is just a thought, isn't it? Yeah. It stands already here in the present grace within the only interval of time that sin and fear have overlooked. The miracle is hiding in shining silence behind every problem you ever had or could have. That's page 595, paragraph 12. One of our favorites. The miracle is hiding right there, right behind your difficulties. That's where miracles are found because that's the only place they're needed. Because you're overlooking your free thought. You're one thought away from happiness. Jason, are you one thought away from happiness? Do you know this?
No, it's just the thought. It's not even one or two or three or four. It's the thought.
Good man. Good man. That's it. You got it. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Andrew.
Good job. We managed to hit it.
Lovely group. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you,
everybody, for your contributions. It really matters when you guys speak up and you share with us. Really. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
Andrew. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.